Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show tonight dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and, well, whatever else we can throw in there. And I thought tonight that I would deal with a subject which I've talked about before. Of course, I always add new things and hopefully develop more of the concepts that are involved in the areas that I'm discussing. Tonight I thought we'd talk about increasing responsibility and becoming more of a soul. Now, these two actually are kind of the same thing. Most people don't know that, so I'm going to define and explain, as usual, what I mean by becoming more of a soul, and what a soul does and how a soul functions in comparison to how most human beings, while they're physically alive, function. Now, of course, we come from a soul. We are part of a soul. This is very important because most people don't know that. Most people think that they are completely separate from, not part of, and maybe even in some ways independent of a soul. And that's not the case. We came from a soul because the soul wanted to create more virtue in worlds of time and space, in other words, dimensional parts of our universe, that it can't live in directly. And you might say, well, why can't it live in there directly and forget about the human being? Just go ahead and lower its abilities and change its functioning so that it can live in these lower realms. But there is a problem, and let me explain it. Souls basically are, we'll say, very responsible. They tend to take on the responsibilities of others who they deem are needing some assistance. This is a good thing, and it has a great merit to it. They also, at the same time, do not have physical, astral, or lower mental bodies. They don't even have a sense that would exist in these realms. Now, they could try to take on the senses that we have, that humans have, because that's where we inhabit are those realms. But if they do so, they have a problem because they are inundated with information that is illusionary and would cause them to, with their nature is to continually focus out and try to take responsibility for others. They would find that by doing so, their self-existence in these lower realms would be compromised and their lives would be extremely short and possibly perilous. So the weird thing about this is, and I want you to try to follow this thinking because it's hard to understand this. If one were immediately born as a soul, complete with all the soul consciousness in these realms, without having learned the traps of illusion that other people are going to be following, as well as themselves at times, and the misperceptions that they're going to have, because their focus would be so much outside of themselves and onto others, they wouldn't have enough self-preservation to keep themselves alive long enough to make their life meaningful. Now, you might say, well, how do you get out of that trap? Because that sounds like a very circular problem. And there is a way out of it. And the way out of it is to create an intermediary type of consciousness. It's actually subconscious in comparison to what most people think of as their consciousness. But this subconscious part is in each of us, and it's called our personality. And the personality, unlike the soul by nature, does not focus out, does not take responsibility for others, but virtually only takes responsibility for itself and those that it has particular needs from or caring about or love about, but not most other people. And so consequently, when it becomes illusioned, it still focuses in on itself to keep itself alive instead of focusing out on others all at the same time while it's illusioned which may cause it to die. It's a weird situation. So the personality is a device to try to keep human beings alive enough, long enough, so that they can learn how to deal with these very illusionary environments that produce a lot of misinformation, and that if the human were to follow the misinformation by just giving to others all the time, they probably wouldn't survive long enough to do much good. It's a very strange thing. Okay, so then how do you get around this problem? Because here we have the personality that is created by a soul that is actually a very imperfect being. The personality is. The soul is nearly perfect in these lower realms, could function nearly perfectly except for one problem. It would not be able to correct its mistakes fast enough because of its own illusions while it was being completely focused out and not trying to develop itself enough to overcome the illusions so that it could survive long enough to eventually be more responsible for others in a real, we'll say, functional sense. Okay, the personality is there to get us through this, we'll say, quagmire. And it's designed for approximately the first 28 years of a person's life to gradually move from a position of understanding its own illusions, its mistakes, its false information, and convert that false information into corrected perceptions, improve its senses, and then improve its knowledge so that when about age 28, it can start becoming its soul and it can change itself, which is the conscious part of itself, from being very selfish, self-focused, to becoming unselfish and focusing out on others. I hope you're following this. I'm going a little bit fast here, and maybe I don't need to. I didn't check this out tonight, but I think it's true. We're going to go till the next hour's half hour. So we're going to be going, for those of you who are listening on the West Coast, and in Arizona, we're going to be going, until 8:30. But for the rest of you in the country, that means that the show is going to be over an hour and a half long, which is great. Okay, so we got enough time, and I'm going to make sure that I explain this in a couple of different ways so that everybody gets it. Because this question comes up frequently, and people usually don't have an answer for it because they don't understand the nature of the problem. And even in my writings, while I have explained this in the lectures and the writings I've given, it's usually to people who have a much, we'll say, deeper understanding of the nature of the problem, maybe from first-hand experience as well. And so I haven't explained it maybe as simply as it needs to be so everybody really does get it. Okay, so one more time. Let's go around it one more time. I'll see if I can try to give an example here so that it comes through more clearly. I'm a soul. Okay, I'll put myself in this position. I'm a soul in the higher monastic or mental world, and I want to create more of my creator, co-create with it, in the lower three worlds, the lower monastic, the astral, and the physical world. Well, I'm speaking to you, of course, from right now. So I want to make it so these worlds have more light in form, have more virtue, and the darkness and particularly evil goes away. It goes away by my great deeds in helping to co-create with God. That doesn't mean that God isn't also functioning through all the other people who are doing the same. But each soul has a mission, we might say, based somewhat, as in my case, on my past karma and on how I can best interrelate with my soul companions that are going to incarnate in and around the same time and location that I'm going to incarnate. Now, the incarnation is going to be of a human being. And I recognize immediately that this human being has got to survive, because if it doesn't survive, even though it may have really good intentions, it might even have fantastic sense of spiritual purpose. But if it doesn't survive, then the whole exercise is one of futility. So I've got to make sure that that's going to take place. I am well aware that I need to create something called the personality. So I ask a fellow oversoul being, some people call it our guardian angels, or we'll just call it a solar angel, but whatever you want to call it. I ask for some assistance because as a human soul, I'm somewhat limited in how well I can create a personality. And so I say, hey, you have even greater wisdom than I have. Let's work together along with some other souls, because collectively I get a lot of input. And I come up with the right kind of personality. Now, I may do this a number of times in a virtual system of going through scenarios while my past personality was functioning, and incarnate was functioning. So I am always tending to live in the future. And I'm tending to practice and check out and see what kind of personality would interact with my contemporaries' personalities and see who survives the experiences the best and who has the best chance of also creating more virtue in the world. So I come up with that. Now, I also have to work with the karma of past personalities. And that's always an interesting problem because that karma is going to come in that person's life, and how it comes and when it comes is determined by how I help to design this personality along with those assisting me. Once I come up with the right personality, that personality in the beginning I recognize is going to be very selfish. Now, this is an interesting point. I know that what I'm creating is an imperfect being. It's imperfect based upon the fact that the best senses that can be made are the combination of all that has been designed in what is called spiritual genes from the past, and is the karma of the being I'm going to be creating. And those senses are going to really be imperfect. Tremendous amounts of illusion, particularly in the physical world, are going to be garnered. This illusion is going to be inaccurate information that then becomes created into knowledge that has a lot of, we'll say, imperfection, a lot of mistakes. And the person's going to waste a lot of time with these mistakes, and they're going to be, unfortunately, stuck in many quagmires of having the wrong action under the wrong circumstances, not taking responsibility. I recognize this, and I say, well, it's part of the way the system works. I don't want to create a being who's going to be selfish, but there may be, and there is, no way to keep that being alive long enough, at least in its earlier life, without creating significant levels of selfishness, because if it doesn't pay attention to itself while it's making these terrible mistakes, it's probably not going to survive. So even if it had all of my great abilities of focusing out and wanting to serve others, if it chose to do that early in life, in most circumstances, it's not going to survive. Now, if it has really good karma, a person that has been through many lifetimes and has created great lifetimes of co-serving with its creator, then I would have a lot more options. I could make a personality that would be much less selfish and put it in circumstances with much less selfish parents and friends, an environment that is so wonderful that it will be able to focus out at a much earlier age, maybe even into childhood. What a wonderful thing. These are the rare exceptions, and they happen towards the end of the incarnation process. But unfortunately, for hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes, this is not the case. And I'm stuck creating a personality that is subconscious to itself, to the self of the person, and functions mostly to just control and keep the person alive. That's its main job. And I make it so. I imprint it with that, with the help of my guide, my oversoul or alter ego, and we're going to create a personality together that is going to basically be what most people would be considered selfish. I have to do this, but I also plan, and I hope the plan works, that as this person ages and gets into their 20s, they will start changing, and they'll become less and less selfish. So the nature of people below the age of 20 is inordinately selfish. And this may not surprise those of you who have had children or can remember your own teenage and earlier days, when it seemed to you at the time as though you were doing the right thing, but in reflection, in retrospect, you may regret many, many actions as being quite selfish and having with it a callousness and a lack of taking a lack of responsibility about almost everything in life. This is not coincidence. This is by design, and it's by necessity. So this hopefully explains, for some of us anyway, our earlier life and why we're like that, you know? Now, you might say, well, why 28? Let's get to that point, okay? Why 28? 28, we grow in seven-year cycles, and it goes something like this. The first 7 years, we're very concerned about our etheric and physical nature. We have to learn how to operate our physical body so that the senses are picking up reasonably accurate information, and that doesn't occur until after the seventh year of life. And then from the seventh year to the 14th year, we start using these senses instead of relying upon others to help us so much to see if we can get them to work in more and more, we'll say, focused out ways, less selfish, a little bit more accurate at the same time. And while we're doing that, then we're developing our astral or emotional nature, making sure the feelings we get are more and more accurate, and develop those to the point where we hopefully can, by age 14, start using these in ways, by experimenting with them, that become less and less selfish from 14 until 21. But from 7 to 14, we're just trying to find out all the screwball errors we have in our feelings. It takes about 7 years to understand all the mistakes we make and how we feel about things. And hopefully we develop some levels of empathy that are significant during that period of time. And then finally, from about 14 to 21, people tend to focus on getting their mental senses. Now, most people don't even know they have mental senses, so I'm talking about things that you may have trouble with. Their mental senses to be more accurate, so we can understand the thought of others, including that which we read and hear and see in our environment around us. This thought is very important because it really develops the lower mental capacity and helps us to become, in many respects, a knowledgeable person or people. It also develops some part of the higher mental body about concepts. So we start figuring out some concepts between the ages of 14 and 21. Those concepts are not usually applied very much in our life. In other words, we aren't functionally using the concepts very well, but at least we're starting to learn about them and understand them. Generally, it happens in about, if you split the period up of the 7 years, during the first 3.5, we may just literally, by rote memory, learn some elements of the concepts. Then the next 3.5 years or so, we gradually gain a deeper understanding of what they really mean. So people, when they move on to college, if they go to college, or if they just live life more, start understanding the concepts that they may have learned earlier, but only learned them in a very, very, we'll say, superficial way. This is most interesting that this is the way that it works. And I don't think there's too many people that really understand that that is the process. Okay, so when we look at this whole, we'll say, area of development, by age 21, the other bodies are starting to gel together to some extent. They're not totally unified, nor are the senses in the bodies unified. That's a whole other developmental issue. That's how you become a super being. But at least they're starting to work together reasonably well. And from 21 to 28, a person starts to gain some slight levels of intuitive thought, while at the same time, they are able to create some elements of new concepts in their life, or to add to the concepts that they have already learned. This is the period of mental creation, and there's a big spurt change in people from 21 to 28 in doing that. They should also, if the soul's plan is working, be starting to focus out more and more onto others, so that by age 28, there's a midpoint between how selfish they are and how much they're focused out on others. So hopefully at 28, at least half the time, they're spending their life being concerned in some ways about other people. Now that concern isn't 50% of their total energy or ability to give. It's not even close to that. It might be 1%. But at least 50% of the time, they put some consideration into how their behaviors and thoughts and feelings have some effect on other people. Now, that's the way it's supposed to be. It doesn't necessarily work that way. Some people never do that. Of course, those people we consider to be pretty significantly selfish. But at any rate, this is how it works. This is how the developmental period works. From 28 to 35, then, a person starts actually trying to change themselves on a conscious level and become more virtuous and to look at ways that they can take conscious control of this process. If they do achieve that conscious control, then between 35 and 42, they can make some tremendous spiritual changes in themselves. It won't necessarily improve their physical life in terms of material improvements. It will change their spiritual life. But that's a whole other, we'll say, viewpoint from where I'm trying to start with. At the present time, most people are really stuck in the problem of dealing with their personality and how do they correct the issues in their personality where they have maybe become irresponsible rather than responsible. Responsibility is the nature of the soul. So what we're really talking about is the journey of the soul becoming something greater as it becomes more operational through the human being in the lower three worlds. This allows the soul then to, let's say, start expressing itself through the human being. And so the two are becoming one while the human being is incarnate, and that's what really is the issue. That's the desire. It's not easy to do, because taking responsibility means that you're not just being responsible for something you committed yourself to be responsible for. That is actually taken care of as the personality matures. I'm talking about something that goes beyond this. I'm talking about someone who says to themselves, I'm going to take responsibility for those things that really I don't have to be responsible for. But I'm choosing to take responsibility for it because I see all life as part of God and all life needing my service in some way. So the focus out is on this element of spiritual service rather than on gaining something, either control or material things or whatever it might be, on the part of the personality. Sometimes it's just pleasure. And there are other ways that personalities tend to absorb them, absorb the way their senses are telling them things and to express it in life. These are unfortunate. Okay, let's go through this now. Let's look at what increasing responsibility really means. To a person, from the person's perspective, they are not yet their soul. In order to increase responsibility, they have to increase their sense of accuracy. They need to have their senses working better. And in order to get the senses working better, They need to sacrifice the use of each particular sense. And that sacrifice has to be to give up what the sense normally is used for on this, by the personality, which is to gain something, to get something, to gain control. The sacrifice is to give up control, to give up getting something, and instead to give something. And that something needs to help others to become more giving in the same way themselves. This is the test. And again, the struggle usually begins for a lot of people of this nature at about age 28. This is the test. And can we do it? How do we do it? Well, the method I'm proposing is called spiritual discipline. It's where you narrow down. And when I say narrow down, I'm talking about specifically looking at each one of your senses. And it starts with your physical body, because those are the ones that are the most easy to do this with, to begin with. And you start with the easiest first. And see how you're using a specific sense in a specific time. Are you taking the information from that sense and applying it both in your thoughts and your feelings and then in your actions for yourself? Or are you doing so for others so that they can do more of the same? You make that your test, and you go through your day that way. Does it sound difficult? Well, it is. And the more you do it, minute by minute throughout the day, the more the sense becomes clarified and it becomes more accurate. The illusionary or mistaken or wrongful information that it was supplying starts to become much more accurate and improved. Now, the very basis of how the personality is functioning is changed because its nature is being changed by the fact that information it's receiving is now more accurate. You're becoming a soul. The soul has accurate senses in its own realm, but it has no senses in this realm. And it invented and created the personality so the personality could work around such an accurate sense. But if you start feeding the personality accurate information that you have disciplined to become accurate because you focused it out, then only the sense itself only improves each second you use it instead of diminishes, which is the normal way if it's used selfishly. So you start going the opposite direction with it. You start making it more immortal, more improved. It'll last a lot longer, and eventually it will last forever. This is what happens when you use a spiritual discipline. And the personality starts becoming less and less subconscious. It actually merges with the self, and a thing called the higher self, and it starts becoming and recognizing itself as a soul rather than a human being. That's what the soul wants, of course. And that's what human beings who are in this process ultimately want as well. Now, a breakdown happens in some people who start this spiritual discipline process. The breakdown is in the complication of keeping themselves aware of wanting to be a soul. They may go through the exercise of quote-unquote spiritual discipline. They may have learned it well enough to do this, but their motive is not to be a soul and to help others to be souls, because they still have the unfortunate gravity of the personality in its prior life, wanting to continually control and to gain something, get something from what it's doing. Sometimes, this is very contradictory, sometimes what the personality wants to get is to see itself as being a spiritual person, and others do the same. And that's a kind of hypocrisy and contradiction paradox that personalities have to go through. They delude themselves into doing spiritual things because they want to think of themselves and have others think of them as being spiritual rather than because they want to be a soul. How do you get out of that? By reminding yourself that you are the soul. And, you know, there's a poem that goes along with this, that you're pure as the driven snow. You have this greatness that is within you, and that you can express if you choose to, if you let it happen. And that the way to let this happen is to not confuse your motive with how you appear to others or how you appear even to yourself. You have to be self-forgetful. You can't say, gee, I want to be spiritual, therefore I'm going to do this spiritual discipline, because the result of that is that you won't become spiritual because you're self-focused. Okay, this is one of the main traps. This is one of the greatest problems in becoming more responsible and improving the connection with the soul. Now, how many people go through this and find this kind of problem? Almost everybody. Almost everybody for lifetimes does battle with themselves about the motive to be spiritual. There are parts of us, even parts of our brain, but there's parts of us that are go well beyond the brain, in our senses, that always remind us that we are a part of God. That's what makes us human in comparison to being animals. So we're constantly reminded that we are part of God, but because our senses aren't clear enough, we can't see what God is. And so it's easy for us to fall in this trap of wanting to be part of God for the wrong reasons. And not recognizing that we come from God and we don't have to exhibit it to ourselves. We need to only be it. Being this is different than wearing the cloak of illusion to others, like pretending as though we are spiritual, pretending or doing certain behaviors to make us look spiritual, rather than doing what helps others and serves others. Real spiritual service is not following some doctrine. It's not necessarily doing some religious group of activities. It is helping others to do more of the same. That's what it is. And that's what the soul does. And when you do that, you take responsibility for others, and they become more important than you do. But it's safe to do it then, because you've clarified your senses and your life won't disintegrate by you focusing so much out on others. Now, if you did that when you were 5 years old, you probably wouldn't survive. You can see that. Unless you're really an unusual five-year-old. Because you got to pay so much attention to everything that's going on around you, especially the physical world when you're that age, or else you won't make it. You see what I'm coming to and explaining about. Okay, so hopefully this is making some sense. So where do we go from here? We've got a basic foundation now of how the system works, and basically you need spiritual discipline, as I described, and you need to not be an illusion. You need to not fall into hypocrisy about it. You need to not follow certain, we'll say, societal normative ways of functioning that may be illusioned in themselves, like do these 10 things and it makes you a good person. Follow this particular religion's behaviors and thoughts and you'll be fine, that sort of thing, because that is not the way. The way is always about service, and it's about what it takes at the moment, and it's always creative. So what are we going to talk about then? We're going to talk about the first element of a soul's purpose. A soul's purpose is first to co-create. Co-creation means that what we're doing at any particular time in our service is unique to that time and place and cannot be written about and followed, cannot be dictated from or to. And it has to come from the heart as well. So you have to have a feeling of doing it, wanting to do it, a true motivation to do it. You can't follow some type of plan because you're supposed to do it. If you do that, you're just doing spiritual hypocrisy. And many spiritually disciplined people do exactly that, so be careful. So the first thing we need is to be creative, because if we are not being creative, we're falling into one of the other traps I just described. Creation means that unique and special changes coming from unique and special choices that a person creates themselves through their mind, emotion, and physical actions are special to that person and that moment in time, and they're done for the service of others so they can do the same. And they're done with the service of others as well. Now, the with is a critical element. Because this is such a difficult process, and as we develop, humanity develops in general from one lifetime to the next, it becomes harder and harder to create. Let me give you an example. If we go back hundreds of thousands of years ago, some humans had to learn how to maybe do the most basic creative exercise, like how to create fire, or how to create a object that makes it easier to move something, like a wheel might, or like rolling something along a log. These kinds of things that I'm describing are relatively easy to create. Relatively. The relativeness is that the ability of humans to create them was lower than it is today. But nonetheless, they were pretty simplistic solutions. And each human that found them and used them could then inculcate that to others by education. Today, that's not so much the case. The solutions to many issues require quite complex creations that cannot easily be in a single way learned by one individual. So you can't just take the parts from one person and come up with a solution that one person may be capable of. Instead, taking the understandings or consciousness of a number of people and adding them together is much more efficient today because our abilities are higher. And so our co-creations can be much more complex and much more advanced. And they need to be. You need to create at your level of maximum response. That's called responsibility. So whatever level you can actually respond to and bring it not just from your mind, but also down to the astral or emotional and to the etheric physical level to actually have it concretized into something that's going to be useful. In order to do that, you need to do it together. That's the idea behind souls. Souls realize this and they work together. And they do so without self-focus or seeking any reward from others. They are doing so because they know this is the best way to function. Now, many spiritually disciplined people fall down in this. They have a difficulty. They still seek individual recognition. They still argue and confront the differences in ideas and efforts of others, and instead of trying to build upon and work together. This creates dissension, and it undoes their spiritual discipline. It also undoes their being their soul. Because souls aren't like that. This is where the personality, again, is tripping up people and causing these kinds of problems. Okay, so I want you to think about all that I just said. When we come back, I'm going to give you some more ways that you can use to really improve this whole system and come out with some really great results, I hope. So we will be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about increasing responsibility, becoming more of a soul. And hopefully you did hear the first part. I was just told a few of you out there, or maybe, I don't know, a couple people, or maybe a dozen people, whatever, who are connected in a certain way may have lost the signal when we went to break. But hopefully you've gotten back on, and if you haven't, then you don't even know I'm saying this to you. But hopefully you have, and thanks for coming back. Most of you don't even know what I'm talking about. But there's a certain way to connect. If you're using a dial-up connection, that may have caused you to get disconnected. Okay, so we are back again, and again, this is live radio. I always want to tell everybody this. We have all kinds of stuff going on here. Normally, in live radio, you have an engineer that's like 10, 20 feet away from you through a glass window, and you actually can communicate. I've done this. I know what I'm talking about here. And, you know, so you can cooperate, and there's a lot of stuff that you can communicate back and forth about, et cetera. But this is live radio with the engineer like 1,000 miles away, or maybe 800 or 900 or whatever it is. And so it's not quite the same thing because we can't always be communicating with each other, and things happen. So, like last week, I know for a few minutes after one of our breaks, it's some piano music or something, or I think it was at the beginning of the show, actually, last week, but some piano music running in the background. It wasn't my piano music, but someone's piano music. And so it was harder to hear me because I had a sort of a weird accompaniment from some other show or someplace, wherever it was coming from. Okay, so let's get into the heart of the matter. We got to come up with the plan of how to really move ahead in increasing responsibility. Obviously, spiritual discipline is a major part of it, but it isn't the whole part. It really goes deeper than that, and part of it has to do with self-meditation. When a person is spiritually disciplining themselves, they have to do so with the right motive. And right motive comes from contemplation, and it comes from reading and educating oneself about metaphysical subjects. You can read stuff I've written or any number of, a lot of sources out there. When you read these things, you stimulate the parts of your mind and even your brain that connect you to God. And that's the reason to continually educate yourself. When you stimulate that part of yourself, your motives become clearer and stronger. Now, a lot of people tell me, well, I've done all the reading I'm going to do. I did it before I was 25 or whatever. You know, it doesn't work that way. You can't do something, you know, in the earlier part of your life and say, well, I'll just remember when I did that. And then, you know, it doesn't work like that. We're talking about astral things, and astral things are very much in the present. You can't rely too much on the past, except for hardcore knowledge. And astral things are not hardcore knowledge. Astral things have to do with the ability to regenerate feelings that you had in the past and connect it to the present. The only way to do that is in the present, to continually educate yourself. Self-education is critical. It could come also from the need or desire to teach and to explain to others. So part of this process is not just reading about and then meditating about something. It's also taking the effort, a much bigger step, into teaching it to others. And if you're part of a spiritual group, then teach it to other people in the spiritual group. Also teach it to anybody you come in contact with. If you don't do this, mark my words, your motives will go wrong on you. And when they go wrong, they go really wrong. So this is an important element. I'm asked a number of times by people, well, what can I do? And I almost always include, you need to be reading and then meditating and contemplating what you're reading. But I'm adding a further step here. Once you get good enough at that, and especially if you're part of a spiritual group, you should be teaching. And that's part of the process. Teaching other people helps you to give your understanding, your consciousness, to others. And that's so important if you're going to really clarify your motives and make sure that your motivation is in the right direction. As a matter of fact, you won't even know what your motives are if you don't do at least some of what I just said. You'll be clueless. Okay, then what's the other steps that really are kind of, we'll say, hidden away and most people don't realize? Well, the other parts include the following. Most people don't do what I will call truly contemplative prayer or in some circumstances saying or doing something that actively connects them to their creator. Now, you could say, well, but I really, you know, I'm not that much into religious stuff. And then, now, I'm not suggesting religion. I'm talking about spiritual. Do something every day that is consistent, that connects you to some higher source. Every evening, I say the Great Invocation. If you don't know what that is, you can look it up and you can read it for yourself and see if it's something that strikes a chord with you. Now, the interesting thing is it doesn't have to be that specific thing. The real issue here is that you're focusing yourself to be connected with this greater source. Now, why do you want to do that? Well, again, it has to do with this element of motivation. And in this case, you're trying to connect the astral nature, which is the motivational part, with the higher mental nature. Because try to pick something. The reason I like the Great Invocation is because it's kind of mystical and you have to think about what it is and what it means if you are doing it with any kind of sincerity. And this also applies to other complex things that you might read that are somewhat over your head. Those are the kinds of things that you're not reading any longer just for concepts and information, but also to challenge yourself to try to connect with God. If you haven't tried it, and if you don't mind buying a book, I suggest The Light's Hidden Meaning, because even though I wrote it, of course, it's a little self-reflective, maybe. But the point is that the reason it's such a good book for this purpose is it challenges the reader. Almost every line, every sentence is a challenge. And something that's challenging like that gets a person closer to the Creator when they choose to want to understand more deeply what it is that's challenging to them. If you aren't challenged in the things that you're trying to read about and contemplate, and if you aren't challenged in the things that you're maybe invoking by saying a certain invocation or whatever it might be, then unfortunately it's not as effective. So you want to use things that are challenging. And those things are going to be the things that you don't maybe want to do. Because challenging things also sometimes lead to certain levels of failure. That's okay. It's all right to fail. If we don't fail, we haven't really reached our limits. So pushing ourselves to a point of failure is not the worst thing in the world, provided you're not failing at the cost of others. You don't want to fail in your areas of responsibility, but you can certainly fail in your development and growth of yourself spiritually by pushing yourself beyond what you're capable of. Then you know your limits and you grow them. Okay, so reading things that are really challenging is worthwhile, even if you think at the moment you're not getting as much out of it as you would like, because it's so difficult. There are a lot of other books that do this as well. If you're more into the mystical realm, you can read the Alice Bailey books that were co-authored or written actually by a master of the Ageless Wisdom, sometimes referred to as DK or the Tibetan. There's other names. But those books, there's like 23 of them that were authored that way. Not the ones that she wrote herself necessarily, alone, but the ones that were co-authored. Those books are very, very deep. They weren't necessarily written only by this one master, but mostly, I would say the majority of the material, slightly over 50%, was actually written by this great being's, this master's students. That also means it's even more challenging, because as you read this stuff, what happens is you turn the page and now you're actually in a new session where Alice was writing down what she was thought she was hearing, and a different student is actually talking to her. So interestingly, there are some contradictions, some interesting changes in viewpoint, and it's a challenge. It's a real challenge. And then it's semi-mystical. Now, semi-mystical means that some of it's plain English. And the other half of it is, unfortunately, not plain English. I tend to speak in non-mystical, demystified ways to you. But mystical people are available to be heard on this station and others. And you can read a lot of mystical stuff, because the majority of writing to date has been mystically written or semi-mystically written. A mystical form of explanation, either verbal or written, is, unfortunately, I think, I say the word unfortunately, has to go first through the astral body and then to the mental for a person to understand it. And our astral bodies are pretty messed up, so we don't get very clear understandings by reading things or hearing things that are mystical, maybe even less than our grandparents did. So it's not the best way to gain an understanding these days. But it certainly can be challenging. If that's what you want to do, then doing that may get you closer to your creator, because you're pushing on yourself. Even better is to understand things demystified where they're available, because those are more direct and the accuracy of them will be much higher. So you're going to get more value out of the time spent, at least in terms of value in being able to use the concepts to build upon and create new concepts with. Whereas in the mystical and semi-mystical, that's very difficult to do, although you certainly can get closer to your creator, which is part of the reason you're doing it, but not the only reason. Okay, so let's move on. What else can you do? Well, I just touched upon that, and that is that you can start creating new concepts as you need them. And this is very, very difficult to do. It requires great judgment and tremendous mental abilities. But you can work on those. You can discipline the spiritual mind the same way you discipline any other part of your bodies. And you do it by focusing on one sense at a time and trying to improve the way that sense is giving information to you so that you can create higher levels of knowledge. Eventually you reach a point where you may become intuitive. The intuition at first may be very uncontrolled. That means that you can't say, well, I'm going to use some intuition here to figure this problem out for the next hour. You're lucky if you have 2 seconds of intuition during an hour, if you're at the beginning stages of it. To stay in an intuitive state for an hour or 2 hours, tremendously difficult. Why is it so difficult? Difficult because you have to be completely focused out to have intuition. By definition, intuitional thought only exists when a person is 100% focused out. It could be for a second, a minute, an hour, a day, a lifetime. But however long they can maintain it, that's how long they have intuition. If they can maintain it for minutes, it's called controlled intuition. And if they can maintain it for hours or longer, it's very controlled or fully controlled intuition. Whereas most people have uncontrolled intuition, which lasts only seconds, seldom a minute. So that's the difference. And do you want to get to that? Yes, absolutely. It's very important to attempt to reach that level so that you can really experience the universal mind. It's not the mind of God per se, but it's the mind of those who are ahead of us, usually just into the next kingdom. That's usually to us like God. To really hit the mind of God, by the way, you need to be really, really strongly controlled in your intuition, oftentimes for weeks or months at a time. That's some great feat, believe me. And it is once you reach the mind of God and directly access that mind, that's a totally different kind of experience. Because now the stream of consciousness is an interplay of oneness between yourself and your Creator. It's a great experience, but you have to be in a state beyond that of a soul. You have to be in what's called the monadic state of consciousness in order to have that happen. And I won't go any further with that because that will be pushing the limits of almost anybody that's listening to this show. All right, so just to get to the soul level of consciousness, we would want to get to controlled intuition. The soul has controlled intuition in its own realm. It's limited in its informative amounts, and it's limited in its structure of all the concepts it can use, because it's trapped in a very narrow part of the higher mental world. And it really needs to be free of the mental world completely to truly have controlled intuition and to have the freedom to be completely co-creative and to be the kind of soul, which is called a liberated soul, that is not constantly restricted by its lack of sense. So the senses have to be perfected in the three worlds, which are the lower and higher mental world, as well as the astral and the physical. And all those senses in each body have to be unified, and then the three bodies have to be unified in order for a soul to be liberated to the point where it can think all the time in controlled intuition, and the nature of the soul is always present. There's no, we'll say, periods of lapse of soul consciousness that can happen to a soul during certain circumstances while it is still in the mental world in its life structure. Now, what does that mean? Well, that means it focuses its consciousness on its mental body. And for a soul to be fully free or liberated, it has to focus its consciousness on its intuitional or Buddhic body. Then it's free to completely use its mental mind instead of relying upon having to take from its mental mind for its own consciousness to exist. So you have to remove your consciousness from that which you're using in service in order to fully be able to serve with it. Otherwise, you're taking something from it, and then it contradicts the concept. That's a little hard to understand, I realize, but hopefully you got that. Those of you who have read Life's Hidden Meaning already know what I'm talking about, because, of course, it's talked about in that book a number of times. Okay, what else can we do? What other options do we have if we're going to become more responsible and become more of our soul while we're physically alive? Well, one of the things you can do is you can have a dialogue with your soul. Now, this sounds a little far out, so I better try to break it down into some elements that make some sense. First of all, our soul is not one being. It is one being in terms of the direct connection with the incarnate, with us. But there's an indirect connection with another part of our soul, which is like its alter ego or its helping partner that some people call the solar angel, or some people also refer to as the inner guide or the great one of beingness. There's all kinds of names. The point is that this indirect part of our soul is always connected to us, where our soul is not always connected to us. So it's a little easier to have a conversation with the indirect nature of us as our soul than our direct nature. The direct nature is actually harder, because in order to have direct contact with our soul, with the limited part of the soul, you've got to be serving. And for a lot of people, they can't do both. They have trouble serving and having direct contact because humans don't have their senses unified yet. So the easier route is to not try to connect with our individual soul, but to connect with this solar angel, which is actually, that being doesn't even see itself so much as an individual as a collection of other souls like itself working together. But once you have connection with this solar angel, you have some great advantages, and let me go through them. And to begin with, we all have a beginning connection. I should clarify what I said. And that is that we all have some connection with it, because our conscience comes from this being. It doesn't come from our individual soul. It comes from this solar angel, which is helping our individual soul. And the conscience is the collection of thought from solar angels of millions of people, literally. So when we talk about our conscience, it isn't the thought of our individual soul. It's the thought of this collection of thought, and it's telling us what is the right thing or things to do in focusing out on others to be of help at our level of capability. The solar angel only deals with us at our level of capability. It doesn't deal with us about beyond our level, and it doesn't deal with us below our level. Here's the catch. If you need to or you want to have communication with your solar angel, you have to be, in a, not at the moment, but you have to have been for the last day, two, or 10, or whatever, functioning at your level of capability a good deal of time in terms of being responsible. So whatever you're capable of having done for the last day or two at least, if you, for that last day or two, reach that level of capability, you then can have a direct dialogue with your solar angel. And what I just told you, I have never revealed to other people before. So, some people have read a book I wrote called Afterlife Love. And in there, the character says that they're not going to say what I told them. Well, this is one of the things I told them. Okay. Of how to have connection with your soul. And you might say, well, why are you telling us that? Well, because I'm teaching, and because some of you may have use for it. And the reason not to tell people about this is because too many people will try to do it and never even come close to using most of their capabilities. And that doesn't really help them, and actually hurts them. Because if you try to have a more connection with this great being, or sort of collection of beings, and have a dialogue, and you haven't done your responsibility, you haven't been responsible, you haven't done what you're capable of doing. Maybe you've done a lot of good things, don't get me wrong, but not at your level of capability. then the results are you will have diminished sense and you will lose some of your ability by just attempting to have communication. So there is a reason. There is a definite reason to not necessarily do this in some like haphazard fashion. Okay? I hope that's sort of like, I guess I gave you a warning or something. It's sort of like, this is the way it is, and I appreciate that all of you will heed my advice, right? Hopefully you will. Some of you won't, and then you'll discover that I was right. Let me know. Okay. All right. So if you have reached your level of capability, and you've done this consistently for like a day or longer, whole day, then you can try this. Now, the way you do it is that this is the process. The first thing is usually you start by putting yourself into a meditative state. You look towards the inward part of yourself where you know that you are rightly motivated to be close to your co-creator, to God. Because this is as close as you're going to get to be talking to this great being, this extension of your soul. And then your conversation cannot be about anything that you would derive any direct benefit from. As a matter of fact, if you don't heed this, you will immediately be cut off. You won't have any communication. Or if you've had some, you'll be broken. And the results will not be good. You'll have some diminishment in sense and some unusually more difficult problems to deal with. Then you have to approach this being as seeking an alliance of co-creation with some help of whatever it is that you are finding difficulty in being co-creative about and in wanting to create more virtue in the world about. I don't care if it's anything from fighting evil to teaching a huge number of belligerent people. Whatever it's going to take, if you find that you're challenged and you've reached your level of capability and you've done so for about a day or longer, you can then approach the great ones, or great one. It's hard to say because they function together so much. And you will actually hear them talking to you. Now, if you're schizophrenic and you've been hearing them talking to you all of your life, that's not your soul or angel. You're just schizophrenic. But if you never have heard anyone talking to you, and you hear someone talking to you, and it's like inside and outside your head at the same time, and they're saying tremendously important and wise things that are helping you to understand in a new and better way how to raise your level of capability, because that's what they're going to explain to you, how to raise your level of capability to improve your service even further. So if you can do that, you will have an amazing experience. And this is a way to really increase your level of responsibility, but you can't get there unless you're already doing the most you can do in the first place. So remember, there's no end to what help is available. But don't push on that help or look for it if you haven't done or aren't doing your due diligence in the first place. You have to also have a clear heart when you do this. Your motive has to be really, really just to serve and not to gain something, not to look better, not to have other people think you're great. And if you do have this happen, I don't suggest that you tell other people about it because you may fall in the trap of seeking something from others like, oh, gee, a contact with his good soul, you know, wow. And you don't want that. Now, I'm going to take a little break by telling you some things. There's a woman who has been helping out the spiritual group I'm a member of. I tell you about her. Her name is Kavita, and I think she's at Nova? Novus. Someone's helping me get the name. Nova Home Loans. I knew it was either Nova or Novus, but it's Nova Home Loans. And if you want to get some loans for energy efficiency, or just you're in trouble, if you're upside down, you got problems, call her, Kavita, and talk to her. Now, a lot of you are listening to me. You're outside of Arizona. and she functions at this particular bank in Arizona. But you know what? If you call her, she'll help you find someone in the area that you're in, if you're in the U.S. at least, to help you out. A lot of people need help these days in refinancing and other issues. Let me give you her phone number. It's 480-430-6911. Kavita. Ask for her. Mention this show. Say that, hey, I heard Niles. She knows me. She knows me. And tell her that you're interested in that kind of help, if you can get it. Also, I want to mention that a little word of thanks. We very recently got some help from a specific attorney who has volunteered to do some significant help to deal with some very bad evil, corruption, bad corruption. And this attorney's putting together or attempting to put together a collection of the best attorneys in the whole country, the United States, to serve in this great mission. So thank you for that. And this is, I don't want to give any names right now because that could compromise the thing that they're doing. So I wouldn't want to give up names right now. But I want to show the appreciation, at least, of the spiritual group I'm a member of and all those who have been of some help to know that that's happening. I really appreciate that. Okay, so I'm going to come back now. So that was sort of like our mini break. I'm going to let your minds rest after that great talk about how to be with the solar angel and all that business. And what else? Give you a little easier things that you might want to try doing. What are the easier things to try to be of greater responsibility? Well, here's some very simple things. In your daily functioning, ask yourself every 15 minutes or so, what have I done that has been focused out and of service to others? And if you haven't done anything, then take it upon yourself at that time to do something very specific that will achieve that. So at least 4 times an hour. And that's a good exercise. It doesn't have to be specifically in one body or another. It could be astral, it could be mental, or it could be physical. But remember that as you do this, you are trying to integrate these senses together. So over time, you're going to eventually want to do something that incorporates more of one body and more of another body than just limiting it to the specific single sense. You do have to start, though, with a single sense. Otherwise, you'll be overwhelmed and you'll get confused. You won't really understand which sense you're trying to work with if you don't limit it to one sense at a time for a while. Eventually, you want to join them together, and once you'll know when you can do that because you'll see your capabilities improve. And you'll be able to start joining these senses together. And as you do that, you'll be able to be more capable to do greatness in your daily life. You'll know that you're doing the right thing because over time, it may take a few days, you'll start feeling joy from the things that you did from days before. It takes a little bit of time. The reason is that the joy comes from becoming aware of the help that you did for other people by seeing that they're doing the same. It's working out for them. And then you can smile and experience the joy. You won't experience it right away because it's dependent upon others and not upon just what you did yourself. So let that be kind of the lesson. And don't expect to get joy out of anything. Sometimes none comes. Other times, huge amounts come that may lead even to a blissful state. But regardless, it should never be the reason that you are attempting to focus out and become less selfish. Another thing that you can do is you can make a list of all the ways that you have been selfish, say for the last few days or week. And you can be on the lookout for a repetition of any of those ways of incurring selfishness. Selfishness is a strange thing because most people, if asked, will claim they're not selfish. And most people are incredibly selfish. They think of themselves 98, 99% of the time. But they think they're not selfish, because we live in a state of illusion. How do you get around that? Well, by exercising your state of contemplation and reflection. Reflection, in this case, would be the more important one. And seeing when you have been selfish in the past. It's much easier for us to determine selfishness from acts that we did days, hours, days, even weeks beforehand, than it is for us to do it at the moment. In the moment is the most difficult place to do it in. It's actually more difficult than contemplating the future. Why is it so difficult in the moment? Because in the moment is when all the information is coming through, which is illusionary and mistaken information and wrong, that is telling you something different than the truth, telling you something different than is accurate. And that creates accurate knowledge, which would be truthful. That's the problem. So in the moment is the most difficult time to actually try and make the change. But here's the catch. Eventually, in the moment, is where the service takes place. So it's in the moment that you have to eventually change. So use reflective and contemplative methods to help you to become in the moment and able to function fully focused out. That's called a now, an O-W. Why is that so important? Because in order to make a change in yourself and in others that is constructive and co-creative with your creator, there only is the moment. This is hard to understand, but to God, time really doesn't exist as we understand it. Time is all moments for each moment rather than a continuum of past, present, and future. It's a little different type of time than we are used to. It's a type of time, though, that you do experience if you are serving and you are 100% focused out. Then you are in this timeless state where it takes no time in which to create something. It takes no time in which to teach. It takes no time in which to serve. The only thing that it requires is the complete focusing out. And the self becomes this thing called the higher self, which is really the self of our soul, of the soul or angel. We become that self, and that self is so much larger than our lower self that we become connected to all others, and we're no longer just an individual. We still maintain our individuality, but now we also live and are part of the lives of all those that we are serving. That's what God experiences. And that's why God is in a timeless state. Because to God, the life of all beings, past, present, and future, is its time. And the experience of all beings is its time. So time isn't central focus from God's perspective. Time is focused out from the perspective of all life. When we start experiencing time that way, we are in a timeless state as well, and we're not focused on ourselves, which gives us this strange illusion of time that it's all centered around us and it's moving from past, present to future, with our consciousness being the focus of what's happening. Once you get into serving with others and co-serving with others, then time becomes their lives as much as your life. And their lives connect even from the past, even in prior lives, to the future and their futures as they are co-creating them. So you have a very different perspective then of what time means, a very different perspective of what life means. Your life literally grows to a huge level because now you're living through all of these other people and beings, and you're getting closer and closer to your creator. Just an amazing sense, we'll say, of being something greater than a human, for sure, and really being what I would call somewhere between a non-liberated and a liberated soul. So if you really want to experience what your soul is, then you want to do all the things that I've talked about in tonight's show. I hope this has been helpful, because this is the most comprehensive I've ever gotten into, and how to become more responsible to the level of becoming your soul. Okay, let's say that you've really done all the things that I've said so far this evening. There's much more that I could get into, but let's say you've done all these things and you are doing them. Then you already know everything I've said in terms of the experiential nature of it. And you also have something that's really unique. And the uniqueness is that your perspective now is the soul's perspective. You may not be able to always function as a soul, but you've gained something new, and that is when you look out, and when you do focus out by choice, your perspective is from the dynamics of a soul rather than a human being. And you feel limitless. You feel that your ability to solve problems and be creative is infinite, and that the only thing you can't control and change are people. But in terms of co-creation in the universe, you can co-create with all those who seek to co-create with you ad infinitum, and in an effortless fashion that does not require the normal, we'll say, limitations that humans experience. Humans find most things an obstacle, whereas a person who is doing most of the things that I said in tonight's show experiences most of life as an opportunity to co-create, and there are no obstacles other than other people who seek to do the reverse. So that you could say that the only problems in the universe for people who are truly spiritual are the people who are still remaining selfish. And those people, they're the real problems. But they are problems until they choose on their own to change. Of course, we can do everything we can to be of service to them and help. You can't force them to change, because that would be evil. There's no forcing. There's only giving them so many opportunities that they sometimes choose them. Okay, so hopefully this makes some sense. And if it doesn't, you can always call me. You can email me. Or you can get some of the materials that I've written. You can listen to other shows as well. Got a lot of opportunities here to make the kind of changes that are needed to become more of a soul. One last thing to consider is that souls work together. And remember this from what I said earlier in the show. If you're doing much spiritual discipline, you're going to need to get together with a group of other people. If you can't find an existing one, then create one yourself. It's not hard to do. You simply let other people know that you are seeking to serve, and you come up with the ways that you would like to serve, and you ask those who find that service to be part of what they want to do in their service, and then you form your own group. That's called a spiritual group. That's all it is. Now, spiritual groups don't always call themselves spiritual groups, because service doesn't always require that someone know that they're spiritual, only that they're focused out and co-creating with each other and with God. They don't even necessarily recognize as co-creation with God, although many would maybe put it in that context, but not all. Some may not even say they actually believe in God. That's a rarity, but it happens. So remember this, that if you want to do this at the maximum levels, or even sometimes at the even normative levels, you're going to need to do so with others. So forming a group is really a part of the process. Becoming part of a group is part of a process. And you shouldn't be afraid of that. You don't lose individuality. You gain individuality while you also gain something further, group consciousness, together. So there's nothing wrong with that approach. And for those of you who still have some doubts about it, then I do suggest that you spend as much time serving in your capacity alone, but recognize that you're very incomplete and it's not a very efficient process. And at some point you will come to the conclusion that you need to work with others in order to be fully efficient and fully capable. You only will reach your highest capabilities and that includes the ability to communicate with your soul or angel, then if you're part of some group of others who are co-serving with you. So if you aren't a part of a spiritual group, I wouldn't recommend even trying to have communication with your soul or angel. The chances are virtually nil that you will. Or if you're having problems in your spiritual group and having arguments, fights, etc., you're not going to have much contact with your soul or angel either. That's another problem, and you need to stop doing that. Okay? Hopefully that's going to make some sense to you. I hope tonight's show has made a lot of sense. I want to tell you about a few things before I get off the air here. And if you haven't tried it, I do suggest you try Ideal Cellsorption Resveratrol. It's a product that helps people to stay young and healthy. And if you haven't tried it, I've been using it. Lots of other people I know have been using it. You can get it from foreveryoungproducts.com. That's foreveryoungproducts.com. 800-777-7850. And they're running a special on it. You can get a bottle for like $50. And if you want it for your animals, a kind of a different formula, but it works very well in animals, you can get that. It's Ideal Cellsorption Resveratrol VF veterinary formula. And that's like $35. And both of these do about the same thing. It works better on dogs and cats than it does even on people, faster at least, because of their metabolism. It works maybe six times faster because the metabolism is that much faster. And actually, you'll see improvements in your animals. If you love your dogs or cats, this is a good thing to try in them. Exotic animals, I can't really tell you much about. So if you have exotic pets, then you're really into experimenting if you're going to try this stuff, because I can't really tell you what might or might not happen if you use it. Probably nothing bad, but be aware that it hasn't been used on every kind of animal. I know they use it on mice, so if you want to try it on mice, you can do that probably safely. If you want to reach me, you can reach me at thoughts@whylifeis.com. Try our website. You can hear some of these shows if you want to on this website I'm going to give you, or on the station's site. It's agelesswisdom.com. Go to agelesswisdom.com. Check out what we've got over there. That's the spiritual group I'm a member of. And also, I want to mention Soul Balance. If you haven't heard about Soul Balance, you should try it. And the reason to try it is the following. It tends to unify the centers, and it tends to boost the immune system through etheric effects, not through, we'll say, medicinal issues. And it's a great formula. It's available, and you can get it from, I'll get that name of the people that get it from here. It's somewhere on my desk. Here it comes. Ah, here it is. Okay. You can contact Life Balance Association, and you can reach them at 602-472-5127. At 602-472-5127. Having a bottle of Soul Balance around could literally save your life if you've got a serious type of illness or if you have some other kind of issues going on in your life. It can make a huge difference. I would have a bottle around because you never know when you might need it if you don't want to take it on any kind of, or don't need to take it on any kind of regular basis. Some people do. If you have some kind of allergies, immune systems, other things that are problems, you may want to take a small amount a day. But other than that, it's important to have a bottle because it affects so many serious problems that people can run into in their health. Okay, we are out of time for right now. I hope tonight's show has made some difference for all of you. And I hope you now understand how to become more of your soul. And if you don't, or if there's some questions, you can still contact me. I am available. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.